You're listening to the Live Free Now podcast, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. And now your host, John Bush. Hey there, it's John Bush with the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. We're streaming on the Conscious Resistance Network, and you can also check out the podcast at livefreenow.show. I'm excited to announce that we're now on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts, so you can subscribe with your favorite feed. And today we have a really good show lined up for you. We're going to be chatting with Marjorie Wildcraft of The Grow Network, thegrownetwork.com. I've known her for many, many years. She is an expert in homesteading, preparedness, food production. And man, she has got a lot of irons in the fire. She's got a wonderful source of wisdom as well. So we're going to chat with her about everything going on with COVID and how important it is to be prepared, be more reliant, grow your own food, natural medicine, natural remedies. And we're also going to focus on some tips and strategies, some nitty gritty how-to things that you can do in your life to be better prepared. First, I want to thank one of our sponsors, freeounceofkratom.com. Go to freeounceofkratom.com to try Kratom. It's a member of the coffee family, helps people with stress, relaxation, anxiety. Some people use it to overcome dependency on opioids or opiates. We're giving away a free ounce. All you got to do is pay $5 for shipping and handling, and we'll ship you an ounce right away to try. Many people have totally changed their life utilizing Kratom. If you're watching us on the Conscious Resistance, be sure to go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com, bros.freeounceofkratom.com. That way you can support the Conscious Resistance Network. They get a portion of the proceeds. All right, without further ado, let's bring in Marjorie Wildcraft. Let's see. Here she is. Marjorie, how are you?
Hey, John, I'm doing great. I love that name, Conscious Resistance. That I've just been tripping on that while you've been doing the intro.
Yeah, my good friend Derek Bros. It's his channel. That's part of the YouTube network that we're broadcasting on. We're going to get some questions from the audience here in a little bit as well. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We're broadcasting live. But it's all about not just resisting about things, but doing it in a conscious way. And he argues that if we were to get rid of the state and the government and not do all the work, the internal work, and to improve our lives and to heal, then we would simply recreate another problematic system altogether. So it's really critical. So let's just start. For the folks that aren't familiar with you, you've been around doing a lot of great work for a while. We've known each other, I don't know, for maybe about 10 years. Maybe just give an introduction to yourself. People can find your work at thegrownetwork.com, but let's just start by introducing your background a little bit to the audience.
Sure. Well, I'm the founder of the Grow Network, which is now an online community. Oh my God, I can't believe it. About 450,000 people.
Wow.
And we are stopping the destruction of the earth via homegrown food. That is our mission. I started out years and years ago. I used to be my first, I'm like nine lives, so happy with this lifetime. But I started out as an engineer, and then I became a money manager, and I was in South Austin, buying and selling houses and investing, structuring high yield real estate. And I basically foresaw that 2008 was going to happen, although I saw it way before then. Mm-hmm. And I saw that really global economic collapse was in the cards. It was just inevitable. And I thought 2008 was going to be it. And I didn't realize that, really, the ability of the U.S. government to print $1 trillion a year and keep the thing going for another decade. Woohoo, I'm glad they did. Right. It gave us all that much more time. But, and I really never grew a lot of food or worried anything about stuff like that. And I said, what happens in economic collapse? I mean, I knew I had to completely take apart my business, which I'm so glad we did that. I would be so far under, never come out again under. We had so much highly leveraged real estate. Are you going to make money in real estate? You're going to use leverage, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, the biggest thing, and yes, absolutely, defense, personal defense, super important. But you can learn to use a gun and you can learn personal defense pretty quickly. Medicine, absolutely. We've already seen with this so-called COVID thing going on that medical system is not what we would all hope it to be. and easily, it's even easily overrun with a normal flu season, much less a COVID one. But the real thing of reading tons and tons of historical material, visiting countries that had collapsed, interviewing collapsed survivors, food and eating is the biggest thing they all talk about. That's the biggest hardship. And I thought, well, better learn how to grow food. And now here I am running a whole network of people growing food. I found it wasn't healthy to focus on economic collapse so much or preparedness or survival. It's just kind of a negative space to be in. And somewhere in there, I realized how fundamentally angry I was at how we're treating this planet. And we said, look, why don't we just stop the destruction of the earth? If all of us grew a little bit of food in our backyard, we could stop those combines. We could stop all those CAFOs, you know, the virtuous way we raise meat. And we would all be a lot healthier.
Yeah, there's so many benefits to growing your own food. It seems like it's one of the foundational elements of living the free life, right? Our show, Live Free Now, is all about freedom in a variety of different areas. And it's hard to be free when you're dependent on all sorts of other institutions, even the grocery store down the road, which has conventional food. I don't know how the poison food became conventional all of a sudden, but right. Let's start with food production. Let's talk about some of your food production systems, and then we can get into some advice for people that are maybe starting fresh or people that already have some basics, how they can improve. I know you're all about the high yield, minimal input with maximum output.
Yeah, because in any kind of collapse, you're going to have a lot of time to grow food. Do you have time to grow food now? No. You know, it's like when it really gets bad, are you going to have time? No. So you have to use high yield. And especially, you know, the big elephant in the room for the United States is malnutrition. Like we are probably on par with some of the poorest countries in Africa in terms of nutritional content. It's just we're gigantic, right? So it doesn't look that bad. Yeah. So a real big thing that I'm a proponent of is growing half. And I've been growing half of my own food at least for more than a decade now, maybe a decade and a half. And it actually is surprisingly easy. There you go. Thank you for whipping that up. It's surprisingly easy to grow half your own food. You really only need a backyard size space. It involves a small 100 square foot garden, a flock of 6 laying hens for eggs, and a small rabbitry. And in that, if they go to that Grow Half website, and it's a free thing, we got a video there, and we'll show you, we'll take you step by step through the calories and how long it takes every day and just what it looks like. And but you can do it. It really isn't. Boy, that would take such a load off. And you know what, John? The saving grace is, I find this the magical, beautiful, like there is a God saving grace in this whole thing. And that is you can grow your own food and you can make your own medicine in your backyard. You do not need a military, industrial, governmental complex to do it. You can still feed yourself directly from the earth. So that's to me.
Super rewarding when you do such a thing too. How much of your food production for you and your family are you guys pulling from your own property?
Yeah, I'm always doing at least half for me.
Nice.
Yeah. And I, you know, not for the whole family. I can't get them to work all the time. So. Actually, my kids have grown up and flown the coop, and my husband and I untied the knot. So I'm in this really delightful time of my life when I'm really getting to reinvent myself and focus on what's really meaningful and throw. Actually, for me, what's really meaningful is the Grow Network, because I've been really able to throw a lot more time and energy into that. And boy, you know, living a life of purpose. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You know, waking up every morning like, I'm getting to do what I love today.
Living the dream. Freedom.
Freedom. And the cool thing about my business is like growing healthy, beautiful, nutritious, colorful food. I mean, every meal I eat is so wonderful. It's so colorful and it's bursting with life. And the benefits of, you know, the side benefits of the job I have are incredible. So, yeah, I'm loving what I do.
Right on. What role does livestock because we used to have a 2.5 acre farmstead, and we had a whole lot of raised bed gardens. We even did a bunch of hugel culture gardens. Mm-hmm. We also had 120 chickens at one point. And I found actually that managing the chickens and getting the meat from them and the eggs, it was a lot easier than taking a plant from seed to fruit. So what are some of the best animals that people could start with in their backyard?
Yeah, with all due respect to the vegetarians and vegans, and I absolutely appreciate different dietary choices that people make, but even actually a lot of vegans and vegetarians that grow their own food will still have animals in their system. There's three reasons why they're so important. And the first is they're just easier. They're just easier. It's easier to raise animal products and get more nutrition out of it. For example, a small home rabbitry, one buck, three breeding does, it'll take you maybe 200 or 300 square feet. It'll produce you so much fertility for your garden. It's so much easier to get your fertility, your nutrients for your garden or for your trees or for your other things from that. But it'll produce, let me see, I just did the math on this morning. Even in Texas, where you can really only breed about 3 litters a year per doe, you're going to still end up with about 75 rabbits a year. And that is a rabbit and a half a week. And that is really the protein requirements for a family of 4. And a rabbit is very equivalent to a chicken. So everything that you, you know, all your recipes for chicken, the stir fries, the roasting, the enchiladas, everything, it, you can use rabbit. And I've often fed people rabbit and forgot to tell them, and they just assumed it was chicken. So animals are so useful, one, for the fertility, two, for the high calorie density that you can get in a small space. And the third thing is the nutrition. So it's not common in this day and age, but for people my age and older, my mom, every week, we ate liver. And liver and onions or pate or, you know, but it is it's a superfood. It's incredible, the amount of B vitamins and CoQ10 and iron and all these amazing minerals and vitamins that are in liver. Now, I would never recommend eating liver from the commercial food supply ever. Like, that is going to be the most toxic stuff on earth. But the animals that you've raised yourself and you know what they've eaten, those organ meats are incredibly nutritious. You also get to simmer the bones and make bone broths, which have another way of pulling out a lot of magnesium and phosphorus and calcium out of the animal that becomes very, very bioavailable to all of us. And we all need these nutrients.
Right on, right on. Tell us a little bit more about this growhalf.com. It's one of the projects y'all are working on right now, growhalf.com. What can people find if they sign up here? What resources will they get?
Well, they'll get the short video, which we show people exactly how to grow half of their own food in a backyard-sized space. And then we have a bunch of there's several ebooks that go with that give you details on picking different breeds of chickens and rabbits, organic gardening toolkit that shows you pretty much everything you're going to need to know to start doing organic gardening. Also, free food stocks for rabbits. So how can you raise these? And John, you know, an interesting thing is that. Initially, I recommend you just buy commercial food, you know, the highest quality feed you can, non-GMO, hopefully. But it doesn't take that much to actually grow half of the feed for your animals and create the nutrition for your garden either. So it's actually pretty, I mean, one of the reasons I chose rabbits for the system is they're herbivores, and it's very easy to do grass, tree clippings, landscape clippings. The other part of the grow half system is a flock of chickens and a little hen house with 6 hens. And for everybody who has hens already, you may not appreciate how much those ladies are doing for you right now. 6 hens, a hen, you know, most of the laying breeds can do about 250 eggs a year. With 6 hens, that's 1500 eggs.
Wow.
You know,
that's enough to trade with your neighbors.
That's a lot to trade. That's 365 3 egg omelet breakfasts every morning, plus like deviled eggs for, I don't know, 20 potlucks, right? And then, yeah, and then a ton of them to trade, barter and trade with friends and family. So just a little thing. And you know, in Austin, and a lot of cities are catching on, they actually help subsidize the cost of your chickens because they have a financial interest in it, is they found that chicken owners have less trash pickup.
And, oh, yeah, right on.
Yeah, the reduction in the cost for the whole garbage and landfills and all that stuff. So I forget how many like tons of material will not go into a landfill when an owner has chickens, because you feed everything to all the strips you feed to the chickens, right?
So I love how the systems are interrelated and sustainable and interconnected. That's a big element of permaculture, and having the rabbits and the chickens, really, they're like your own little composting system, and they pop out some food. Austin's really cool about chickens, and there's several major cities that are as well that are kind of more green leaning. There's some elements of good green leaning, and then there's some bad elements like the United Nations Sustainable Development, but we take what we can. But there's some friends in our Freedom Cell network, which I'll share about in a little bit, but they said that they actually can't have chickens in their neighborhoods. Maybe it's a homeowners association or it's this little city ordinance. So I told them the best tip, if you're going to have chickens, is to bring eggs over to your neighbors, so they'll kind of have an incentive not to rat you out to the police.
Absolutely. And you know, that can change, because 20 years ago in Austin, Selwyn Pollitt, I don't know if you knew him or not, but he was one of the first, like, I'm going to have chickens in my backyard. He had a couple of hens that he loved. I mean, he doted on these hens. It was kind of funny, interestingly. But he was one of the big champions of like, hey, these are super important. And he fought some of the battles with City Hall and managed to get a lot of the stuff turned around, and definitely homeowners associations. And now, you know, yeah, like not only is the city funding it, but they have this funky chicken coop tour, and there's all kinds of chicken stuff that goes on in Austin. So that whole city has embraced it. But yeah, it did not start out that way.
It takes people taking action. I'm visioning the don't tread on me flag, or the come and take it with the chicken instead of the can. For those familiar with the Texas history. Okay, cool. What else have you been focusing on as far as food production? I also want to talk to you about general preparedness and plant medicine and natural remedies. But are there any other focuses lately, or any other tips that you can give to some people on things they can do in their backyard?
Well, the other thing for the Grow Half system is just a simple 100 square foot garden. And a lot of people think garden, they think, oh, it's got to be huge and whatever. I started out thinking that. And really just 250 square foot beds. And after all these years, what I have come down to is get some raised beds, build them out of cinder blocks, and fill it up with the best quality soil that you can buy. You can build soil. It takes a long time. And really 100 square feet of garden space, you're going to produce so much stuff. It'll be amazing. So you don't really need to have a huge amount of space. And I like, the soil is so precious. And I like to think the garden beds are like a way of just controlling where your really super good soil is. Mm-hmm. You know, cinder block is so easy. And I've actually worked with a lot of military families. They move every 2 years, 3 years. And I'm like, well, just take your soil with you. Or, you know, if it's a different base in the U.S. you're driving to, you could just take your cinder blocks. You know, I mean, if you can move it, right?
So. Yeah. They're heavy, but we did cinder block beds. Those were our first beds. We actually dug down like a foot, and then we did two cinder blocks high. And at the base, because we're in Texas, we filled it with logs and twigs and sticks. Mm-hmm. Sticks. It's a hugel culture, which allows the wall. I'm sure you're well aware of this. It allows the rain. It kind of absorbs up into the wood. And then when it gets drier, the plants and the soil can pull some of that moisture out. I know you used to promote the I guess it was called Grow Your Own Vegetables, or it was book that talked about double digging as a really intensive.
That was How to Grow More Vegetables Than You Ever Thought Possible in less space than you can imagine.
It's a great title.
Yeah, but John Jevons, and he's awesome. And a lot of the numbers that I pull out in the Grow Half video are from his research for what you can grow and how many square feet in the vegetable garden.
Right on.
Man, humanity owes that man a huge you know, he's really done amazing work in terms of how do you really grow food in a small space. Yeah, really amazing.
Can you share with the audience that isn't familiar with double digging what that method is?
Well, most soils that people are going to have are very compacted, hard clay soils. And so the idea of double digging is you'll take a shovelful of the top layer off, because most of the microbial activity and most of the organic matter is in the top layer. And you'll put that aside. You don't want to mix that up with the underlayers. And then in the underlayer, you'll take a special spading fork and just dig down and loosen it up. and break it up enough so that way when plant roots have a chance, they can get down in there. And then you'll put the top layer back on. And it might sound like an awful lot of extra work, but it really does help to open up that soil down below and aerate it. And believe me, you get a couple of plants and give them some chance to get in there, the plants will start doing a ton of work in terms of keeping that soil open and loose and building more organic matter for you. So double digging is an awesome method. I've kind of gotten away from that. I really, if you can afford it, just get some cinder blocks and buy really good soil, you know, and if you can't, then do the double digging. Absolutely. And if you want a much bigger patch, absolutely. I think we're running out of time for building a lot of soil right now. We're 40 million Americans are looking at facing their homes, losing their homes. And that's four times larger than what happened in 2008. Commercial real estate is over. I don't know if Austin seems pretty vibrant, but you go to Dallas, you go to New York, you go to LA, nobody's in those office buildings, and that commercial real estate market is collapsing.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of bubbles bursting. One more question on food production. What is the importance of companion planting? Can you explain what that's all about?
Well, there's an idea that some plants do better when other plants are next to it, just kind of like you and I would do better if we are hanging out together. I have a love-hate relationship with companion planting. I don't really think it's as effective as some of the claims that are made out there. I really haven't done, in the last decade or so, I haven't done much with companion planting. Often to get the benefits of companion planting, you have to plant so much more of the companion plant than you're going to actually use. So I am not a big proponent of it, but I love the idea.
Okay. It sounds like what I'm gathering, and this is the same as back in the day too, is like you have a really practical approach. It's just like, what can we do with a small amount of time, small amount of energy? We all have lives, families, crazy things, changes in our lives. So what is that we can do now that'll give us such a good yield in the future, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the GoHalf system, very simple. You know, if it's like right now in August, terrible time to start a garden necessarily, but in about a month. The winter gardening season actually in the southern states is actually some of the best seasons to grow food, because as it gets colder, the insect population has a harder and harder time making it. You know, pick any one of the three and get started. Chickens, backyard chickens, you can start those any times. You know, starting backyard rabbits, you can start that anytime. So just pick one of the three, and then I would say work on that for 3 or 4 months, get it going, figure out all the feeding and watering and all the stuff, and then pick up another one, and you will be amazed how quickly you'll be producing at least half of your own food.
Right on. Cool. And then again, folks can go to growhalf.com to check out the resources that are available there. All right. Well, let's talk about the big elephant in the room, which is COVID-19. It's totally taken the world by storm. Some people so much that they're completely freaked out. They're staying inside their homes, which, of course, is ironic because the vitamin D, there's studies that show there's vitamin D deficiency that leads to much worse outcomes with COVID. Ironically enough, someone that I'm close with, she works on a farm that is also a community with housing. And when things were really bad a while back, early on with the COVID stuff, they were going to do the building of some raised beds. And it was going to be a community event. Everyone was going to practice social distancing. But some of the people literally freaked out and got so upset at the idea that people would possibly leave their homes and go get their hands in the soil and the sun and get food ready. And I just thought that was completely ironic, because of all the things that we ought to be doing in this situation, it is going outside for our own health. It is getting our feet dirty, you know, not wearing shoes, getting in the soil, mixing it up with the soil and the microbiome and soaking up the sun. And then on top of that, we need to be growing some food, because as we already saw, the system is very vulnerable when it comes to these types of breakdowns. So let me get your take on COVID-19 as it relates to our health. Do you think it's a huge concern? Do you think it's maybe a concern for some people? Do you think it's overhyped? And then I'd love to hear your take on how it relates to the importance for getting prepared and systems collapsing.
Sure. I have been watching the from the moment. So I used to be very active in the survival and preparedness space, and I am very familiar with fear porn. I can write fear porn with the best of them. And I was amazed at what a great job the Washington Post, the New York Times, all these. I was like, wow, those guys are really good at writing this stuff. It really, even the CDC's own numbers, even Dr. Fauci, I don't know how that man can live with himself. He wrote an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that says, look, this has really got the only about the same strength as an average flu season. So I clearly understand that this is a completely fabricated event. I'm kind of grateful that they did not release something that was actually more fatal. And I'm kind of wondering why, because they certainly have their selection of things they could have released. I also understand, so in September of last year, the Fed was injecting up to $250 billion into the overnight funds system, which means what that really means is that banks did not trust each other enough to even lend each other money overnight. And to me, that was a huge red flag. We knew in 2008 that the thing should have collapsed, but they kept propping it up. And it was very, very clear it was out. It was done. This is it. This is the last legs. So the way I see it, the COVID thing is a great cover story. And in some ways, it's kind of compassionate because it had people go home and sit and think about what's essential, stock up on things and start preparing. You know, to that extent, I think that was a very compassionate move. The economy was going to collapse anyway. So was this the best way to do it? I'm sure a lot of people were very happy it was a pandemic because there's the legal consequence that now you can get out of all kinds of different legal contracts because it was an act of God. I think, and just this is my ramblings and taking and what I see is actually what they're really setting us up for is a whole nother currency and probably a singular form of government, you know, one world government, which has been something that's been kicked around for years. So I don't know the full mechanisms of all that. And I mostly focus just on how to grow food. But that's what I see. And I see that we as I said, we're the economic consequences are just beginning. We have 40 million Americans are at risk to lose their homes, and they probably will. It's going to get a lot worse. It is going to get a lot worse. And
yeah,
I honestly don't know how that is going to turn out. But I think we should all prepare. The food supply, the global food supply is breaking down. I watch Bloomberg's global supply chain email all the time, and it's really fascinating the different, like right now, people are still stocking up on food. So the grocery retailers are still doing a brisk business. Mm-hmm. One of the limiting things is cans. They can't get enough aluminum cans and tin cans or beans and beer and whatever. So it's really fascinating the things that are breaking down. And then of course, Brexit is going on. That's causing all kinds of havoc in the UK. And
yeah, it's interesting times for sure.
Migrant workers did not come plant the spring crops. They're not going to be harvesting crops. Fresh food is going to get more expensive. I'm sure you know about the breakdown in the processing plants. Everybody walking off because somebody has COVID or there's not enough healthy, safety, whatever requirements. So they've been euthanizing who knows how many animals. Food is going to get very, very, it's going to become very, very noticeable. We're already starting to see it in the consumer price index for food. It has been going up by a point to half a point every month.
Mm-hmm.
And that will continue.
Yeah, it's only going to get exacerbated. I appreciate earlier in the interview, you mentioned how you've been researching the economy even since before the 2007-2008 housing crisis, which, you know, just like today, the housing crisis was more like a cover for a fraudulent economy already. Even during Trump's administration, how he touted how great the economy is doing based on the stock market, in reality, the national debt is exploding, the discount window, the Federal Reserve pumping trillions. I started researching about the same time, around 2005, 2006, was how the economy is going to collapse. And there's this great story. I would always tell my dad, like, Dad, you got to pull your money out of all your stocks and the investments. We got to hunker down and buy gold and silver. And he would say, well, you know, John, I can go up in the attic right now and get a book called How to Profit from the Upcoming Collapse, written in 1978. And after he told me that, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I'm overthinking this or exaggerating a bit. But yeah. Later on, studying Austrian economics and how the Federal Reserve works and how they print money and they prop up these industries and inflation and the business cycle, I realized that it's the same collapse, really, arguably since 1933 when the U.S. government went bankrupt. And it's just been funny money and fraud and coercion and force that's been propping it up the entire time. So do you think that this could finally be when the chickens come to home to roost and that this economic problem could be what basically causes the bottom to fall out? Do you think we're looking at that kind of depression scenario, or do you think that it'll be more of a slow frog in the boiling pot that maybe could go on another decade or two?
I honestly am not sure. One analyst that I follow that I really like a lot is Catherine Austin Fitz, and she says what we're seeing now is not necessarily like a regime change. She said, what we're seeing is a bunch of groups trying to fight to see who's going to be first at the spigot. So clearly the U.S. dollar is over. And so what is going to replace it is really the question. And they're trying to line it up with a global currency of some kind. I honestly don't know from a, you know, we have so much also coming. Even if this hadn't happened, artificial intelligence is a huge force that, you know, robotics have been destroying jobs for a long time. And artificial intelligence is now starting to destroy all kinds of jobs in the, you know, white collar and the upper level. So that was a huge tsunami of change that was also coming and is still coming. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out. I do see that a lot of people, they're clearly destroying the lower and middle income layers of our, the global economy. Right? Mm-hmm. That's so clear. Like, you know, one great example is, you know, there was a shoe store right next to a Walmart, and we decided, well, let's support the local shoe store. And we go in and they're like, you got to wear your mask. You can't put shoes on in the store. The government has told us that you have to buy the shoes, take them outside, try them on, and then bring them back in. And we're like, wow, this is crazy. these are the government regulations. And we're like, wow. It's for your safety, right? So we go, okay, we go walk into Walmart, no problem. In Walmart, of course, you're wearing your mask, but you're in the shoe section like you always are, and there's shoes everywhere. And by the time we left, there's a stack of shoes all in the aisles. You know, clearly favoritism toward the bigger businesses, like clearly.
It's definitely disproportionately hurting the small guy, business especially.
Yeah. Now, how are they going to deal with all those people? I don't know, because everybody's still got to eat. Obviously, some of the things are looking like, well, are they going to start putting up? There's been talk about a UBI, universal basic income, for forever. Is that what they're going to do and get everybody onto some sort of governmental handout to where that's the only way you can subsist? And
But you got to take the vaccine if you're going to get the checks.
Right. Is that the plan? Probably. You know, wow. And the food that they hand out. I mean, the food, even before all this, the food was toxic, right? It was toxic, right? You don't want to eat it before then. So, you know, more than ever, you know, you want to grow your own food now. Yeah. I don't know. I'm fascinated. To be honest with you, I feel like it's an honor to be alive at this time. There are historians that specialize in the Middle Ages or the Roman Empire or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Future historians will specialize in one quarter of 2020.
This is going on. Everything's happening so fast. A lot of people are liking it to a transition phase. This one guy, Bruce Fenton, he's a big cryptocurrency investor. He early on really was afraid and sounding the alarm. But I think, you know, honorably, he came back a little after the fact and was like, guys, I want to apologize. I think I took this a little bit out of context. It was a little bit I thought it was worse than what it ended up being. And more power to him, because early on people were like, what's going on? Is this going to be like 1918? But it ended up, like Fauci even said in the New England Journal of Medicine, it may be akin to flu. Even the World Health Organization saying the mortality rate is around 0.6. I think arguably it's lower if you take all the antibody testing and stuff.
Even the
probably like a bad flu.
Yeah, even the CDC, the last time I checked a couple of weeks ago, they were down to 0.032 or something. So, I mean, it's, you know,
yeah,
and that's for people who contract it, right? You know,
it's like a transition phase. So it's like, I think it's I hope this is what it's going to be. And I'm, as you said, it's really nice to be alive, because I hope people realize that we have the power to take a active role in what the future ends up being. And I'm hoping that it'll be a transition away from the centralized way of doing things towards the decentralized. Of course, there's very powerful people that are leveraging it for all it's worth in order to further centralize power. But I think at the end of the day, you'd probably agree with this, that whether it turns into a massive depression or not, whether it turns into a more totalitarian situation, we still got to keep doing what we're doing and just growing as much food as we can and building community and becoming more self-reliant, right?
I think so. And, you know, kindness to your neighbors, to your friends. I think the wonderful thing about COVID is it had people realize how important family and friends and relationships are, and just the importance of a simple gesture of touching or reaching out to somebody. There's a serenity prayer. God grant me the wisdom to change what I can and to be at peace with what I can't change.
And to know the difference.
Right. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, let's go to some questions. I'd love to have you for another 20 minutes or so, if that's okay.
Sure, let's do that.
Yeah. Okay, great. So the first questions we're going to go to questions in the comment. We have 86 people that are watching us live, and there's a whole lot of comments. So we'll go to some of those. But first, I want to give preference to my friends at the Freedom Cell Network. Marjorie, just a quick introduction. Freedom Cells are small groups of around 8 people. It's basically like a mutual aid group. We call it an inner cadre. Ideally, you're locally in the same area. And then you encourage the creation of other small groups that do about the same thing. They set common goals, food storage, firearms, so on and so forth. And now you have 8 groups of 8, and they all work together. Then you encourage the creation of other groups of 64 people. And right now we have around 3,000 people that are participating in this network. So we're literally trying to build the free society that's based on mutual aid, liberty, free markets, self-sufficiency, as the old one crumbles around us. So people can check that out at freedomcells.org. I can send you some more info. We'd love for you to be a part of it. And
that is really awesome. You know, there's a wonderful book called Ersatz in the South, which talks about the Civil War in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Florida, so always on trips we were visiting, you know, places where people would shoot at each other. And I always wondered, how did the women handle the war?
Uh-huh.
And this book, because, you know, somebody had to raise kids and take care of the farms and the, you know, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this wonderful book, Ersatz in the South, and I'd really recommend it, especially if you're in the southeastern states. But one of the most successful strategies was just exactly what you're talking about, is it was often women who would gather together to have buying clubs. And basically between the 8 or 12 of them, you know, somebody would know somebody with a connection where they could get flour, they could buy 100 pounds and they could divide it up, or, you know, that kind of thing. So absolutely, that is a very successful strategy.
Yeah. And people always talk about stocking the food and the guns and gold and silver, but community is probably one of the most valuable assets that we can have when times get crazy. Well, these are some questions a couple questions that came from the Freedom Cell Network. I went to them first when I booked the interview with you. So someone asks, what to look for when looking for land or specific zoning hurdles? Are there any zoning hurdles that you've encountered, or any advice on that?
First of all, just a quick small plug. If you go to relocationshortcuts.com, I have an ebook all about how to find the perfect survival retreat and things you want to consider in doing that, not only in buying the specific property, but how to find a community or a region that would be suitable to you. Quite frankly, I usually don't. If something has something with onerous zoning, I just don't live there, right? That's like, you know, if it has an HOA that's not going to allow me to have chickens, like, I do not have time to change that right now. So I will find another property. When I'm looking for property, the most important thing is water. And I really like to have at least 3 different size water sources. Oh, thank you. 3 different sources of water there. And so rainwater collection, ponds, streams, rivers, wells, city water, municipal water. You cannot grow food without water. So water is the number one thing to look for. You know, if it had really weird zoning, yeah, I would just not try to mess with that right now.
Just skip it.
There's a lot of other land out there, or there's a lot of other choices.
Yeah. Try to find land without deed restrictions. Definitely try to avoid the homeowners association. We're saving up right now. The goal is to try to acquire land at the beginning, the end of 2021 or 2022. And that's definitely a big one on our end, because we want to do some commercial stuff out there, maybe have like a tiny home community, grow food and raise whatever we want. We definitely don't want to have to ask permission from our neighbors or the county or city government. So we're trying to get just on the outskirts of Travis County so we can enjoy the benefit of Austin. Although Austin really has been going to hell lately. I don't know the last time you were here. There's like tent cities and stuff all around.
Oh,
and there's tons of crime and the communists have taken over the city council. So it's bad news, but it's still a beautiful city, and we still, well, I wish I could say we have all the great watering holes and stuff, but we're not even allowed to go to Barton Springs and stuff.
Oh, really? They closed that down.
Yeah.
East of Austin, you know, I used to live in Bastrop. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's
where we're thinking. The prices are better there, and the land is great to just plant right in the soil, whereas west, it's more rocky in the hill country, and you can get less bang for your buck. All right, here's one more question from the Freedom Cell Network, and then we'll go to all the folks that are listening live, see how many questions we can knock out. Does Marjorie have any simple suggestions for preserving meat if refrigeration becomes unavailable?
Yeah, so a pressure canner is a good thing, and you can preserve meat that way, and it'll stay good for a year or 2 years. Drying meat, especially if you're in a dry climate, you can dry meat and salt it. Even in a hot climate like South Texas, my father-in-law, who's now, oh my gosh, mid-80s, he was telling me when he was a young man, they always had a smokehouse going and they would smoke the meats. And even through a Texas summer, the smokehouse, the meat stayed fine in the smokehouse. So I absolutely hear you, because I've got a freezer full of meat and I'm like, I've got an emergency plan in case the electricity goes out for... Actually, a freezer full of meat will probably be fine for a week or so. But yeah, I'm not going to lose that meat. So I'm going to be really busy if there's ever a power outage much longer than that, right?
There's been a lot of work. So yeah, it's good to think ahead and to have resiliency and plans and already have the little smokehouse set up in case you need to use it, or already start practicing and stuff, because that's a good way to eat food anyway.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely practice now. And especially things like canning, because, you know, that's something that can kind of make you a little nervous. You know,
mm-hmm.
I also recently bought a freeze dryer, which you can't do a huge amount of volume with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just doing small amounts because I want to see, you know, like, did I seal that properly? You know, how long is that really going to last and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but all of these skills, and people go, oh, you can everything? I'm like, no, I don't can everything. I only can a few things a couple of times a year to keep that skill alive, right?
Yeah. And if you have a small group that you work with, like there's a group in Dallas-Fort Worth, they have a Freedom Cell group with like 16 people. And they're now working on, many of them live on a farm, and they're talking about, well, this person's really good with canning and the preserving of the food, so we're going to grow it over here. Then she's going to do the preserving and canning. We're going to distribute it to the group. It's great. All right, let's go to a question here from the audience that's tuned in. Misuchi Miss says, are there any herbs that do okay without much light?
Oof. Well, I would say most of your leafy greens can grow better in lower light conditions. It's really just a simple matter of an energy equation. In order to produce a fruit or a nut or a big flower, that plant is going to need a lot more energy. But if all of it it's producing is leaves, it doesn't need as much. And really, quite frankly, sunlight is energy, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Just your culinary herbs like basil or chives or, thyme or mint, those can do really well, even on a windowsill that does not get direct sunlight, but does get, you know, some ambient outside light coming in.
Right on.
Yeah.
Somebody says, moringa is amazing. What do you think about moringa? We were going to talk about the plant medicine and stuff too.
I love moringa. And in our farm in Texas, so I had a whole bunch of those. Astonishing how big those things will grow in 1 year. It's amazing. Of course, in anywhere that it freezes, it's going to die back because it's more of a tropical plant. But since you're in Texas, yeah, you should go out to the Homestead Heritage Place outside of Waco.
Okay.
Where they teach all these classes, and they had a garden there with this moringa tree they'd had there for like 8 years. It was pretty amazing. Moringa is super, super, super nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
Your rabbits will love it. Your chickens will actually love it. It's a plant that has had a huge amount of research done for it because they grow it in places like Africa or India where they're very aware they have malnutrition, and people add ground moringa powder to their porridges and things like that to add a nutritional boost to it.
Right on. Here's somebody, he was bragging in the comments about his cannabis grow operation. Is there something that can boost my weed grow?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Any advice on that?
Oh gosh, you know, I'm not a real, I grow weed. I'm a CBD person.
Uh-huh.
People who are real stoneheads say that's junk weed, but I'm a CBD. You know, it's a weed. Just give it more stuff and it'll explode on you. No, there's a whole lot. We actually have a certification where we teach people how to grow it. If you head over to the Grow Network, to the store. And with that, it's all a matter of timing and nutrients. But really, even if you're not doing that much, it's a weed. It grows.
It grows. I think everybody's getting super fancy with the hydroponics and the special breeds and as much crystals and THC as we can get.
I had 8 plants 2 years ago. I'm like, I've still got huge jars of it. I really only need like 1 or 2 plants to last me forever. So you got to be a serious stonehead. And I've seen people grow them. Like, I'm like, oh my God, that looks like a Christmas tree. You know, like that thing is so big.
Yeah.
You know, like
they do grow. They grow like a weed.
They are a weed.
Let's see. The Turtle Tribal Nation says, how do you make rabbit sausage? What kind of books are the best to get for my money for this shit? Rabbit shit or what they're talking about there?
Well, rabbit sausage, you know, a doggone it, I used to have a recipe for that, and then it was a friend of mine was like even talking about the intestinal casings for the sausage casing, and I don't have it handy. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna look into that and I'll post it up in the forums, or I'll get that to you, John, and you can get it out to people. And by the way, rabbit pellets are amazing fertility, and you can take the dried pellets and just put them on your garden directly. Or most small commercial rabbitries take the pellets underneath the rabbits and have worm bins, and they actually make more money from selling the worms and the worm castings than they do from selling the rabbit meat or the pelts.
I love that. That's great. Look, Gabriel Dominguez, we keep up on Facebook. Wow, I love their video. I still have the DVD. I went to the showing and talk she did at Brave New Books.
Oh my God.
That was the backyard food production systems, right?
Yes, yeah.
That's probably still available on your website, yeah?
We relabeled it to Grow Your Own Groceries.
And okay, cool.
That was the video that got me into this business. I made that video and we sunk a bunch of our savings into it, which back then video production used to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't sell. And I was like, oh my God. That was the moment I didn't know it, but I became a digital marketer.
All right. Yeah. It's great to have the assets. You don't have to put any money into, well, you put in money into the creation, and that's really where the value comes. And that's why you can charge people money, because it's just a lot of wisdom and time and making a nice polished product that's easy to consume. But then you can just recreate them and replicate them. And that's a good way to go for sure. Somebody's asking, do you have any paper books? Do you have physical books that people could buy?
Not yet, but I do have a deal with Penguin Random House.
Nice.
And next spring, we're coming out with a book called The Grow System. And it will be all about how real wealth is your health, your family, your community, living a life of purpose and doing meaningful work. And guess what? All of that can be done in your backyard, growing your own food and making medicine. So, yes, please buy the book. It'll be out
all right
today. I'll be back on John's show. I promise you I'll be all over the place.
All right. Cool. Let's talk a little bit about plant medicine and natural remedies. So, of course, COVID-19 is going on. And when it started, like me and my family, well, first I was like, well, let's see what this is going to be like. Is it going to be really bad? But then it started to become clear that it wasn't so insane. And then even the average age for death of COVID is actually older than the average age of mortality in general, which I think is really telling there.
Yeah.
So I knew that me and my family, my kiddos especially, we were going to be fine. If we got it, we wouldn't even notice, more than likely, right? Knock on wood. But what are some home remedies, some plant remedies, maybe some herbal teas, tinctures that people can take? Ideally, they can make on their own that helps to boost the immune system.
Well, you know, COVID, the whole COVID thing and flus in general, Mm-hmm. Are respiratory. They really are involved with your lungs and your bronchi, the respiratory thing. And one of the best things is going to be garlic. And really simple, you want fresh garlic and take a clove of it and then smash it on the side with the blade of a knife, the side to pressure, and then chop it up real fine. So you want to oxidize it, which helps activate, I believe it's called the alanines, which is the most active component in garlic. And then take like a teaspoon of that, put it in some butter or honey if you got to get it down some kids. But I take that when I'm doing it proactively, like 3 times a day. So, for example, before going to Christmas events with all of your relatives who have traveled all over the place and you're in some tiny room without adequate ventilation, I'm usually pumping down some garlic just to. And the cool thing about garlic is it has like at least 35 known constituents that are antibacterial, antimicrobial, antifungal. They don't really even know. It's a very complex. It's a medicine, a whole food medicine. And it is amazing for keeping things like that at bay. Now, if you really seriously had, something like a flu or something like that, you're going to definitely want to stay high. Do all the things you know to do. Stay hydrated. If you can get some good bone broths, I'd be taking the garlic like 8 or 9 times a day, elderberry syrups and teas, rest, sleep, right? Yeah.
Turn the TV off and don't be stressed out.
Right. And again, I just can't stress enough the value of family and love and support and humor, keeping a good attitude.
Right on. On that note, somebody asks, can you ask her in what kind of spiritual practice she is into? If you mind getting personal for us.
Sure. At the moment, or the past couple of years, I've been really heavily involved with the power of intention movement. And the particular, there's quite a few leaders in that movement. And Dr. Joe Dispenza is the one that I've been doing a lot of work with. And I really feel that actually is a huge unknown to what everything that's going on in the world and all the global elite and everything. But the power of people to come together and use intention and love to manifest or create a reality that they want is quite incredible. We for a while, and I want to get this back up, we did some seed blessing experiments where we'd have the community all bless one set of seeds, and then we'd have 3 other controls, and we'd grow them out to see the impact of just the power of thought on those seeds. And I'm actually still looking for like a university or somebody to partner with on this.
Wow.
We found out that doing experiments can sometimes be a little more difficult than you thought, getting the lighting and getting everything, all the controls exactly right and everything. Yeah. But that experiment has been done so many times by gardeners. I mean, it's actually been scientifically done a lot. I just wanted to do it with our community. But I mean, really, there's this one really incredibly great thing where this guy had a robot and he raised a bunch of chicks up with the robot, and the baby chicks will imprint on almost anything, right? Mm-hmm. And so this robot was programmed to just move randomly around through the chicken pen. Well, then they kept the chickens in the pen and they put the robot right next door in another pen, but there was a thing where the chickens could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, if you think the world would be the way the world is, the robot would still move around randomly. But they tracked the pattern of the robot, and the robot always stayed near the fence where the baby chicks were. The baby chicks wanted their mama. And somehow, and baby chicks, believe me, they do not have big brains. Somehow, with the power of intent of a bunch of baby chicks to have their mama near them, they affected that robot.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's a French researcher. I wish I could remember his name. There's some really great YouTube videos on it. Yeah. So I really feel that that's like the X factor. That is totally the X factor that people can do that would totally bypass this whole governmental and all these people that have all the money and are manipulating the bonds and the dollars and the whatever system. So that's what's really doing me. I'm really excited about that work. And it has been quite incredible for me for learning how to materialize or manifest or even plant communication or animal communication.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. I've been on that wavelength for a little while now, and I think I kind of hit a stride with it. And I've managed to take control of the soundtrack that's playing inside my head. And when there's doubtful messaging that pops up, or when there's some seed that got planted by a negative influence, even in my childhood, I'm able to recognize it instantly and not take it serious and just turn it off and shift the perspective to one of abundance and happiness and forgiveness and stuff. And it's really made a huge impact in my life, in my overall happiness, but also in my business, like thinking about abundance and just dropping the fear and the uncertainty about the ability to manifest money and the ability to achieve my goals, my business. It's just been like, nope, success is destiny. It's inevitable. It's only a matter of how fast can I get there. And it's really just knocking out objections and my own objections. Everyone focuses on the external, but the internal game is really where it's at. And then when you can master the internal game, then you'll more easily be able to attract goodness and love and all sorts of stuff in your life. So
absolutely. It is. It's all an inner game. There's a Chinese curse that says, may you be born in interesting times. And what the curse is the interesting times are so, you'll be so externally focused, you'll never do your inner work, which is where the real power is. So
yeah. And the worry is that so many people are focused on TV and fear and afraid of their neighbors and afraid of germs and everything. And so as a result of focusing all that, they're stressful and they got cortisol going through their veins, and then they're washing their hands OCD and they're staying inside and they're not mixing it up with the world and they're killing the little microbiome on their hands and everything. And then they're going to manifest the sickness that they've been focusing on.
It's programming. I mean, they're very clear about it. Like, this is programming. This is television programming. And they mean it on way more levels than one. I promise you. I just don't know how someday somebody is going to, some later generations are going to look at those pharmaceutical commercials. They could be like, how ridiculous with all the side effects, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
it's half the commercials, the side effects.
Oh my God,
restless leg syndrome.
Oh, the side effects are usually worse than the actual thing it's supposed to be clearing out.
Yeah.
But it's programming, you know? So, yeah, staying away from TV and really becoming aware of your own inner programming is the key thing, to be able to be aware of the external programming also. And it is going on. I mean, that's really, it's been astonishing to me to see how, you know, how so many people have really gotten sucked up into the whole COVID thing. It's been really revealing to see who actually owns our governments, because our governments were just told, hey, you have got to destroy your local economy.
Mm.
You know, you have got to destroy all the revenue streams for your own city. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, right? Like, okay.
Yeah, you got to punch yourself in the face. And man, oh man. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up with that kind of spiritual side of the manifestation, because, you know, if you want to grow more food and become more self-reliant, you got to focus on it. So one last time, why don't you just tell the listeners what your offer is here at the growhalf.com.
Yeah, go to growhalf.com, and I've got a video there for you that will show you the whole three-part system, and then a whole bunch of other ebooks and resources so that you can easily implement it. And, you know, and become a member of the Grow Network. We have a newsletter twice a week, and we'll send you all kinds of really cool and interesting things, like how to make homemade fertilizers and germinate peach pits, and and how to make how to use garlic and medicinally. And it's just a really fun community. We have a really active forum with a lot of people who are just like, we're beyond worrying about collapse because we're focusing on real solutions. It's a real positive community.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. It's been super valuable. I know the audience got a whole lot out of it. So keep doing what you're doing. Again, people can visit Marjorie at thegrownetwork.com or growhalf.com. Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, Marjorie.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This has been a Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. I want to thank our sponsors, freeounceofkratom.com. Go to freeounceofkratom.com, where you can try the all-natural remedy for chronic pain, relaxation, stress, anxiety, energy, focus. A lot of people use it to overcome dependency on prescriptions, various types of prescriptions. And you can get a free ounce. Just pay $5 shipping and handling. Go to freeounceofkratom.com. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.